Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Teachers rally for Biden's Build Back Better agenda. Support growing for locked-out steelworkers in Texas. Grad students at Harvard authorize a strike. And today on the show, the service employees on health care and the sprinkler fitters training for the future. Welcome to the Monday, October 4th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. Kevin Brown is going to be our first guest today. He comes to us from the Service Employees International Union. This is a large union, the largest of all, over 2 million members. He's with 32BJ, and they have 175,000 members in 12 states, along with the District of Columbia. They're also the largest property service workers union in the country. Their goal? To maintain a community where members, non-members, and the general public can feel free to express themselves. And what he's going to talk about today is the New Jersey Airport Contract and Healthy Terminals Act. After talks that lasted over 3 months, a committee representing more than 10,000, mostly black and immigrant airport workers across JFK, LaGuardia, and Newark airports overwhelmingly ratified a new three-year contract. The contract is set to provide the airport workers, members of 32BJ, with guidelines on the implementation of the Healthy Terminals Act, which will provide health care to frontline airport workers in addition to improved health and safety guidelines and increased protections against discrimination on the job. From what I have gathered, this piece of legislation is the first state-level legislation of its kind in the country. Listen closely. The three-year contract includes guidelines on this Healthy Terminals Act, which will provide workers with health insurance with no monthly co-premium. Zero. Labor management committees will also meet quarterly and have access to information to ensure compliance with health and safety guidance, including the CDC, Department of Health, and OSHA regulations, and review policies pertaining to personal protective equipment, social distancing, contact tracing, and other procedures. Pretty revolutionary, and that's exactly why we're bringing Kevin Brown to the table today. Service employees have really advanced the cause of health care, and for one union, they want universal health care. We may be years off of that, but they have been pushing hard for that in America. Tim Coleman will be joining us as our second guest on the show. He comes from the Joint Apprenticeship Training Committee on behalf of the sprinkler fitters. Sprinkler fitters, by the way, are highly skilled tradesmen and tradeswomen who install, modify, inspect, test, and maintain fire protection systems in commercial and residential facilities. This is all part of the United Association's Sprinkler Fitters Local 669 Joint Apprenticeship and Training Committee, and they provide training and opportunities in 48 states. So I would imagine Hawaii and Alaska. We'll find out from Tim. What are the two states that are not part of this? Well, apparently the UA has invested $300 million in training and education. And they do that every year. Tim puts it simply, we're training for the future. That's what it's all about. Their apprenticeship program goes back 68 years. It's a five-year apprenticeship period divided into one-year segments, each to include 2,000 hours of on-the-job training, minimum of 246 hours of related classroom instruction, and independent study. The program blends on-the-job training, hands-on training, virtual training that features online access to 19 courses offered through a community college, Washtenaw Community College, which is a nationally recognized college. A lot of these apprenticeship programs are tied in with the community colleges, and many of them walk out, well, for sure with a two-year degree, and you have an opportunity to get a bachelor's degree in some of these programs. It's amazing what has happened in the trades. Training669.org is their website. Training669.org. Well, you might have been following the news this weekend about infrastructure, and nothing's happened. We've got some Democratic holdouts, and Biden did everything possible to try to sway them. But again, nothing's happening. So this is going to take some time. With that being said, Randy Weingarten sent a letter to the House of Representatives over the weekend in support of the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act and the Build Back Better Act. And this is what Randy said. On behalf of the 1.7 million members of the American Federation of Teachers, I write in support of the passage of H.R. 3684, the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. This important legislation makes the largest long-term investment in our infrastructure and competitiveness in nearly a century. It's a critical first step in moving our country forward, and with the passage of the Build Back Better Act, this will enhance our competitiveness, revolutionize our education system, and make our economy and our healthcare system more sustainable. She goes on to say, while infrastructure is often thought of as the concrete and steel of roads, transit, bridges, well, this bill covers much more. The bill offers the potential to begin transforming the American economy to one that offers well-paying union jobs so working people can provide for their families. It makes progress on the climate crisis by promoting clean energy transmission and electrifying thousands of school and transit buses. It modernizes our country's transit, bridge, and pipe systems so many more can get to work and access clean drinking water. Passage of the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act must be followed by passage of the Build Back Better Act. Now, that's the reconciliation package that they're having a tough time with. She says, this is a life-changing set of policies that will make a difference for Americans, from taking on the climate crisis to helping families with pre-K, paid leave, and child care. The $500 million in funding included in the infrastructure deal for making public schools more environmentally friendly must be accompanied by the $82 billion in funding included in the Build Back Better Act for school safety, modernization, and construction, and truly begin to tackle the challenges that schools face. The infrastructure workforce training grants included must be accompanied by support for teacher development and public colleges included in the Build Back Better Act. Randy Weingarten wraps up by saying the nation is confronting its COVID-19 crisis, and now is the time to move forward. Well, apparently they just did not get that message. But they're working on it. They're working on it. I'll take some time here to salute our brothers and sisters down in Texas that are members of the steelworkers. ExxonMobil has locked out 620 workers. This has been going on for 5 months. The Texas AFL-CIO has all along supported these workers represented by the steelworkers. The company has sought givebacks from workers while it makes billions in profits, and the steelworkers and the Texas AFL-CIO have called on ExxonMobil to bargain a fair contract. You know they're a rich company. You know that. ExxonMobil, come on. Since the beginning of the lockout, the office of Local 13-243 has been transformed into a grocery store. A dedicated room in the office stores thousands of food items, household goods, bathroom products, and other donated items. The locked out workers are able to go to the office and choose exactly the items they would need if they were in a grocery store. Mark Morgan is chair of the local's bargaining committee. He said, the people that come in here are keeping the fight going, walking the picket line each week. It's just one of the ways we can try to pay them back and make sure they're taken care of. The flexibility of the pantry allows the steelworkers to assist 200 people a week, and more than $80,000 worth of items have passed through the local's office since May. That's amazing. Just amazing. Daryl Kyle is president of the local. Again, this is Steelworkers Local 13-243. Daryl said, I knew it was something that I wanted to be able to do, but so many people came together to actually make it happen. It's how we support and care for one another. Isn't that something? Solidarity. Solidarity. 5 months locked out. The Harvard graduate Students Union, which is part of the UAW, this is Local 5118, they authorized a strike vote, which ended over the weekend with student workers voting overwhelmingly to authorize a strike. The final tally, 91.7% in favor of authorization. The vote enables the union to go on strike anytime between now and the end of the year. The vote is the result of stalled contract talks between the union and the school, culminating in the current contract expiring over the summer. The union says it and Harvard are still far away on a number of important issues. From raises, Harvard is proposing 2.5% to the union's proposal of 4%, to health care costs, to having better reporting and non-discrimination procedures for student workers. By the way, that union represents 5,000 workers. Another very, very rich university. All right, we have to take a break. When we come back, Kevin Brown, on behalf of the Service Employees International Union, 32BJ. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Nurses, doctors, and caregivers at the VA are under attack. They face hostile management, callous agency heads, and an administration that's stomping all over their ability to speak up for our veterans. Unions are even being kicked out of their offices, a direct attempt to silence the voice of VA employees. When VA workers are under attack, veterans pay the price. Costly privatization and outsourcing will run rampant, meaning fewer services and worse quality of care for our nation's heroes. It's time to stand up for the workers who care for our veterans. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees.
From the Golden Gate Bridge to the St. Louis Gateway Arch, the Sears Tower, and just about every building, bridge, and structure in between, our cities and towns wouldn't be the same without ironworkers. With over 3,000 contractors employing more than 130,000 highly trained ironworkers and 20,000 apprentices, the Ironworkers Union stands ready and able to shape the future of our skylines. Learn more at ironworkers.org. Ironworkers, the sky's the limit.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You could find more online at oh.aft.org. Let's go to line number one, and welcome to the show, Kevin Brown. Kevin is an executive vice president and also the New Jersey State Director of the Service Employees International Union, 32BJ, and they've got a revolutionary deal that they were able to craft over the summer dealing with health care, and we'll get into that in a minute. But Kevin Brown, welcome to the show, the broadcast and the podcast. I have to ask you, 32BJ, what's that all about?
It's just the history of our local, Ed. There was a series of different locals. There was a 32A, a 32B, a 32C, and eventually the B and the J locals merged, and it's just 32BJ. So that's our history.
Now, on your website, and it's SEIU32BJ.org, and I'm reading 175 members in 12 states. I'm looking at Connecticut, Virginia, District of Columbia, Maryland, Florida, New York. You're in New Jersey, Hudson Valley, Philadelphia, West Pennsylvania. That's quite a territory for your region, right?
Yes, 175,000 members from Boston to Miami.
That's amazing. That's it. Now, a lot of these territories, do they include that amount of people in various parts of the country? Is that how the Service Employees does their regions?
Well, this is just our local 32BJ. I mean, that local term is kind of old, doesn't really work for us, but that's who we are. We have property service workers who work in cleaning office buildings. We have members who work in residential buildings as porters and concierges, handy people. We have security officers, we have airport workers, and we have school custodians and food service workers.
I see even window cleaners are represented by the
service. And window cleaners as well, yeah. It's a private sector union.
And over the years, how have those contracts been working out for you? I mean, there's been a tug of war. I mean, they try to keep wages as low as possible and then offer very little health care. But in your estimation, I mean, you've been at this for, what, 34 years? What's the status, especially during the pandemic? This was a tough time for many people in that sector.
Yes, it has been. And our members are essential workers, and they've been working since day one, Ed, of the pandemic. And, you know, it's been tough. You know, we organize our industries through what we call master contracts in each industry, in each region, with multiple employers. We get them all together and we get them to bargain in one contract for the whole industry, for a whole state or a whole city. And we raise up the wages and benefits standards through that. So it's kind of a different approach than most private sector service workers or construction. Well, construction do it the same, but manufacturing or other service workers don't do master agreements. So we do that, and we've been pretty successful at it.
Very successful, I might add. And I want to talk about the deal that you were able to negotiate over the summer, and this took you, what, 3 months? And apparently you got a deal that will cover 10,000 mostly black and immigrant airport workers across JFK, LaGuardia, and Newark airports. Talk to me about the negotiations and what you were able to accomplish here, Kevin.
Well, it's we've been organizing airport workers across the country and in here in the East Coast and in the New York area region. There are 40,000 airport workers, service workers, who are contracted out, and they were low wage, basically minimum wage, no benefit jobs. The three airports being JFK, LaGuardia, and Newark. And through a long series of different strikes and rallies and petitions and delegations and all kinds of activity, came to a culmination where we were able to get, it's about 12,000 airport workers between the three airport workers who are in the union now, who make $17 an hour and have free health care. And so that's an accomplishment we're very proud of. That wage rate will increase $1 a year for the next 2 years. So it'll be $19 an hour with free health care. So that took a long time, but it's a lot of workers, and we think organizing industry-wide is the way to do it.
So let me get this straight here, Kevin. You've got a contract with no monthly co-premiums? I have to ask you, that's not easy to accomplish. How are you able to do that?
Well, we understand that our organizing and our bargaining are inherently tied to our success and through politics. So we passed laws in both states, in New York City or New York State, as well as the state of New Jersey, which now require that for airport workers, essentially they get the what's called a prevailing wage. And so they're getting that prevailing wage now, and which includes a benefit supplement. In New Jersey, we have holidays and vacation tied to it. So, you know, you have to pass that law through the legislatures, which is very difficult. But the members, you know, worked hard to convince the assembly people and senators and state senators and eventually our governors that they should sign it. And we got that passed into law. And so now that is combined with our collective bargaining to provide that health care.
Now, you're referring to the Healthy Terminals Act. Is that what this encompasses?
Yep, that's correct. That's the name of the law in both states.
So you have that in New York and New Jersey, correct?
Yep, two separate laws, but yes. Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm reading the contract also includes protections against discrimination based on natural hair or hairstyles closely associated with racial, ethnic, or cultural identities like braids, locks, or afros. That's all part of Healthy Terminals, or is that just a part of the contract that you've authorized?
No, that's exactly, that's part of our contract. The hair discrimination is something that we found for both airport workers and security officers who work public jobs, often African-Americans, or sometimes Latinas. Latinos do, a different kind of hairstyle, and they'll do it one way. But, you know, if a white person, paints their hair blue, nobody says anything. But if African-American has a certain hairstyle, they're often told you cannot have your hair that way and you need to change your hair. And we find that discriminatory, and we're able to convince the employers that that's discriminatory. And so now we have those laws policies in our collective bargaining agreements in both states.
So up until this time, when workers wore, and we're talking about blacks, Latinos, if they wore their hair a certain way, were they disciplined, fired in some cases?
Yeah, they were disciplined and told if they don't change it, that they would be terminated and no longer.
And right now, the company can't do this? I mean, are there certain penalties involved in the contract as a result?
No, the company, it would be a violation of our collective bargaining agreement. And we could take them to arbitration, and we would obviously win it because the contract language is strong.
I see the committee also successfully preserve MLK Day as a paid holiday. Now, that was, what were they trying to take that away or what?
Yes, in the New York side, they wanted to take it away, but part of it is we also got this wage, originally got this wage established through a policy of the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, and that also included Martin Luther King Day as a paid day. So the employers at one point wanted to take it away and use it as a sick day instead and all kinds of silliness, but we kept it, and we're proud of that.
Well, you should be proud of it. My gosh. So this took, what, 3 months? Were you part of the bargaining in through all this to get this deal?
Yeah. You were. It's a big bargaining team, myself and another vice president of the union, Rob Hill, and we were able to do the bargaining. But most, the bargaining wasn't as complicated in some cases as passing the laws, which required the economics. Otherwise, we couldn't have won the economics, and that kind of money for wages and benefits without political legislative help.
Yeah, I understood. Yeah. So he got the Healthy Terminals Act, and then that led to the contract bargaining. And at that point, the owners of these respective businesses just didn't have much playroom in there. They had a deal with you. Good
yes,
stuff.
Yes, they did. And, yeah. They may not have liked it, but that was the law, and so they had to figure out how to deal with it.
Yeah, exactly. You got to follow the law, right? Kevin, Can you stay with us for another segment here?
Sure.
Yeah, this is model legislation, no doubt about that. I'm sure that there's other parts of the country that are looking at this saying, hey, we got to do this in our area. Kevin Brown joining us on our live line. He's with the Service Employees Union. 32BJ.org is their website. And again, we're talking 175,000 members in 12 states, including the District of Columbia, Connecticut, Virginia, Maryland, Florida, New York, New Jersey, Hudson Valley, Philadelphia, Western PA. Large area there, no doubt. And later in the show, Tim Coleman will be joining us on behalf of the training program 669, dealing with the sprinkler fitters. The UA investing $300 million in training and education every year. We'll get into the details on that as well. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with prostate, breast, or any other cancer after taking Zantac? You may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at KellyandFerraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, we are available on 5 platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. When you get an opportunity, just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. Always appreciate a 5-star rating. Just want to mention here, IATSE, the International Alliance for Theatrical Stage Employees, began its strike authorization vote on Friday. The union represents 60,000 workers in entertainment, and if a strike authorization vote passes, the union's president could call a strike at any time, bringing much of the entertainment industry to a complete halt. Just want to mention here, the union has never gone on strike in its history. We're talking like 70, 80 years. And authorizing a strike does not necessarily mean a strike itself is likely, but the workers say the working conditions need to change. They want a 10-hour minimum turnaround, which is the amount of time in between production days. Currently, some of the turnarounds are 8, maybe 9 hours, which could mean just 6 hours at home in between work days after accounting for 1 hour commutes both ways. They also are seeking to end something they called fratter days. Fratter days is when workers work a late Friday night shift that ends Saturday morning, meaning the workers don't get a real weekend. We are going to talk more about this on the show tomorrow. We have a member of IATSE as a guest on America's Workforce. Right now, let's go back to our live line. Kevin Brown joining us from New Jersey. Kevin is with the Service Employees International Union, SEIU32BJ.org is their website, 175,000 members. We're talking about what they were able to accomplish over the summer, and that is the Healthy Terminals Act, which will provide health care to frontline airport workers, in addition to improve health and safety guidelines, increase protections against discrimination on the job. It's a three-year deal, and essentially they got the Healthy Terminals Act passed first, and that led to much easier contract negotiations with the people that run the airports. And we're talking close to 12,000, mostly black immigrant airport workers across JFK, LaGuardia, and Newark. That's a big area there for airport travel. So, Kevin, sounds like a great deal. It is a great deal. We need to get this around the country. What's going on? I'm hearing that, Philadelphia is now looking at this? What's the story?
Well, yep, we were able to pass it in Philadelphia after we got it done in the state of New York and the state of New Jersey, and the Philadelphia City Council passed the same law. And so now they're going to have free health care as well. So we want to keep this train rolling and get it all across the country so that airport workers who are contracted out have no health care can have some health care and a decent wage.
Now, does that mean Pennsylvania had to pass the Healthy Terminals Act? Because one follows
the
other.
No, the Philadelphia City Council.
Oh,
they
okay.
run the airport in Philadelphia.
Oh, okay. A little bit different there. I gotcha. Okay. Interesting. Now, you're also indicating that this may go national? Where are we?
It might. Well, it's our hope, and we're trying to get federal legislation to do just that.
And how is that being accomplished? Is that bundled with something else, or is this separate?
I don't know if it's going to end up being bundled or it's going to be separate, but we are doing everything we can because people understand that, if you have an airport worker who doesn't have health care, they get sick. If they don't have any sick days, and many don't, they're going to stay on the job, and they're cleaning planes, and they're moving people through the terminals, and that's not good for anyone. Plus, they need to be able to go to the doctor, especially if they end up with COVID. They need to be able to go to the doctor and take care of themselves, and it's really, in my opinion, it's a national health interest to make sure that these hundreds of thousands of airport workers who've been contracted out by the airlines are taken care of, have a decent wage, and have quality, affordable health care.
Kevin, let me ask you this. We touched on this in the first segment, the pandemic, which we're still going through. You are frontline workers, essential workers, the people that you represent, the airport workers. Now, a lot of the airports had diminished travel and all that. I do understand that. But to your knowledge, did a lot of them get sick or still getting sick? And where what's the status with the vaccine? Maybe you can throw that in there as well.
Sure. Unfortunately, Ed, a lot of them did get sick. Some died. And in fact, one of our leaders in New York City died. And it's, pretty rough for quite a while there. Some are still getting sick, but many fewer. And so it's been tough. But now some of the airlines like United have vaccine mandates. And so our members need to get vaccinated if they want to continue on the job. But also there was, tremendous layoffs. Almost 50% of our airport members were laid off last year at one point. But all of them have been called back now. The airlines are running at full force, and our members are still working on back on the job and working hard and trying to protect themselves every day from COVID. And hopefully every one of them is now getting vaccinated.
Mm-hmm. Did you get a lot of support from international on what you're able to accomplish, especially with this Healthy Terminals Act?
From SEIU?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. This is part of a national SEIU airports campaign, and the International Union and the 32BJ worked hand in hand to make sure that we were able to accomplish this feat.
I'm just wondering here because I follow what the SEIU has been doing over the years, and with your 2 million plus members, you've been an advocate on number one, the raising the wages $15 an hour, the minimum wage, that is, and the other is health care. Do you think that this perhaps might be a step toward bringing like Medicare for all, a universal health care type of situation in America? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I don't know if it's a step in that direction, but it certainly is something that SEIU is committed to. You know, we think every person in this country should be covered by health care. Health care is not a privilege, it's a right. And, you know, we'd love to see that someday. But in the meantime, we're going to keep taking these steps to deal with the problem as we confront it, and taking care of airport workers or taking care of all the rest of the service workers that we represent. Getting free, quality, affordable health care is, you know, one of our most important items that we fight for. Of course, number one is wages, but number two is getting that health care and keeping it affordable for our members, because if you're making 16, 17, 18, 20 bucks an hour, you simply can't afford, you know, high premiums, and it'll put you back into bankruptcy, and we don't need that. So that's a huge fight for our union.
Well, congratulations on what you're able to accomplish here, the Healthy Terminals Act, and, of course, the contract that took 3 months to negotiate, and we're talking 12,000 mostly black immigrant airport workers across JFK, LaGuardia, and Newark airports. Great job. Let's keep in touch. Congratulations on Philadelphia, making that happen. And let's stay on this issue. We'll see what happens down the road, okay?
Absolutely. Love to chat again, Ed, and maybe we can get some of our members on the line and tell you how this has affected them as well, because it's really been transformational for them.
So, I bet.
Really appreciate the chance to share with you, and hope your listeners can check our website out, SEIU32BJ.org, and learn more about what we're doing to transform workers' lives.
Keep up the fight, my brother, and keep in touch, all right?
Thank you so much, Ed.
All right, Kevin Brown, that's up, SEIU32BJ.org. 175,000 members, 12 states, along with the District of Columbia. We're going to take a quick break. Tim Coleman with the Sprinkler Fitters coming up next.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you were exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at KellyandFerraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. The Twitter handle is AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number two. Welcome back to the show. It's been a while for Tim Coleman to be on. He is with the training program 669. That's local 669 of the Joint Apprenticeship Training Committee. And they provide apprenticeship training and opportunities in 48 states. This is part of the United Association Sprinkler Fitters. Tim Coleman, welcome back to the show. How are we doing today, brother?
Fantastic, Flash. Good afternoon.
48 states, I assume. You could be wrong, and I'm wrong because I said, well, it's probably Alaska and Hawaii that you're not that you don't have a presence in. But Alaska, you're in. Hawaii, you're not. What's the other state?
We're not in Florida.
Okay. And,
but we do have jurisdiction in the other 48 states, and that makes us America's Fire Protection Union. So we are part of the United Association. Our membership is right around 15,000. We're the largest local in the United Association. As you know, the UA is the pipe trades. The UA right. is in 300 locations across the country with 225 affiliate locals.
So what's going on in Florida? How come you don't have a presence there?
Well, what's great about the UA, the international, and the brother and sisterhood of the UA, there are certain markets, in addition to Florida, but major cities like New York and Boston, Chicago and Philadelphia and Seattle, where we don't have jurisdiction, but there are other UA locals that provide fire protection in those particular markets. So there's a separate UA local that's part of the UA family that has jurisdiction in Florida.
Okay, I gotcha. All right, the apprenticeship program goes back to 1953, 68 years ago. Great year. That was the year I was born, so obviously good things happen in that year. Training669.org is your website. Talk to me about your involvement with the United Association's Instructor Training Program.
So my role, Flash, I'm the recruitment and outreach specialist. So my main focus is to create awareness and pathways for young women and men into our five-year registered apprenticeship program. And just like other building trades apprenticeship programs, we're America's best-kept secret. And as you mentioned, we go back a number of years, and you can trace this all the way back to the Fitzgerald Act in 1937, when Congress passed the Apprenticeship Act, that registered apprenticeship programs, that our curriculum is registered with the federal and state departments of labor, that there is a curriculum that leads to the position of journeyperson. And our program is a five-year program. It's 10,000 hours of on-the-job training and 1,200 hours of technical instruction, broken into 5 years. And when I say it's America's best-kept secret, the North American Building Trades Union last year alone invested $2 billion in training and education. That would make us the largest university system in America at no cost to the taxpayers. So this is union membership paying mm-hmm. forward for our future. And the United Association, we invested $300 million in training and education. So my role really is to create that awareness with administrators, with influencers, with school counselors, with the military, with programs that work with formerly incarcerated women and men, with women pre-apprenticeship programs. So I have a great role. I mean, I have fun every single day because I'm telling a great story and I'm sharing the number one pathway into the middle class over the last 100 years, and that is union apprenticeship programs. And I get to really just talk about, opportunities with Local 669, America's Fire Protection Union. So I've never had a bad day in the role that I have because it's a great story.
The $300 million in training, and this is what the UA is providing. Am I reading this correct? Is that every year that they spend that kind of money?
Yes. And that includes last year during a COVID year. We didn't stop training. And neither did the other trades in the North American Building Trades Union. So last year, NAPTU invested $2 billion And we're in the middle of a pandemic.
Yeah.
And we can't stop training Flash because we are providing essential work. You know, we are protecting the nation with the roles that we have and the subject matter expertise that we bring to the table. So we kept working throughout the pandemic, but we also needed to keep training.
Tim, let's talk about being a sprinkler fitter. A lot of people listen to the show. We're on five platforms now: Apple, Google, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora. And there's a lot of people that are changing their careers. You know that. I mean, there's a lot of people that say, you know what, I'm not making enough money. We're in the middle of a pandemic. They don't pay me. I don't have good health care. Boy, I tell you, you could change all that when you get involved in the trades, especially what we're talking about here, sprinkler fitters. So why don't I'm going to give you an opportunity right now. I mean, you kind of touched on the apprenticeship program, but maybe you can get in some of the details on what it takes to become a sprinkler fitter. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. So the program is designed, you know, through our five-year apprenticeship program to develop journey persons that are subject matter experts in the installation of fire protection systems. So in some states, we're doing residential work, but in the majority of the 48 states, it's 100% commercial work. So you think about, you know, all the buildings that you and I, we walk in on a daily basis that have to be protected. We're protecting people and we're protecting assets. So if you go back to 1911 in New York City and Greenwich Village with the Triangle Garment Shirtwaist fires, where there was 148 young immigrant women that died on a Saturday night because their factory was not sprinkled. It did not have fire protection. And there was a lot of other issues that, as we know, that really just you know, started the labor movement in that area. You know, we had four elevators. Only one of them was working. There was a fire escape. It collapsed. The fire was on the eighth floor. The fire hoses only reached the seventh floor. So within a matter of minutes, these 148 young women, because there was no child labor laws at the time, they were young women. They were working, you know, 60, 80 hours a week. They perished. And a lot of these young women jumped down the fire shaft. So it was the largest workplace tragedy in New York City up until 9/11. And one of the results of that was the passing of the Sullivan-Huey Fire Act in New York City, that factories had to be protected with fire suppression systems. So we install those systems. Now, there are 2,000 different types of sprinkler heads. They all have different types of coverage. We're putting in water systems, but we're also putting in nitrogen systems. We're putting in antifreeze systems. We're putting in foam systems. So you think of a petrochemical fire, and we go back to, you know, when the fire department visited us back in middle school. Well, water's not going to suppress that fire source, so we need a different type of fire suppression system. And in the manufacturing today, in distribution centers, and you think about data server centers where there's just miles and miles of computer systems, you know, we have to have different types of fire suppression systems to protect those assets as well. So these are sophisticated systems. What's great about our teams, Flash, is we have smaller crews. And where that's an advantage for the apprentices is there's more of that one-on-one time with the journey person. So from their development standpoint, they're not necessarily on a crew of maybe 30 or 35. They're on smaller crews, and the ratios are a lot smaller. But what I love to share about our particular trade is that not only do we install these systems, we have to go back, we have to test them, we have to inspect them, and we have to maintain them by law. And that's really the difference between us and some of our, you know, non-union competitors, is that the training, if you want to have a fire suppression system, you want to have that installed properly. Lives are at risk.
Right.
It is a life safety system. It's the only system that, when it's been installed properly, has never had a fatality. Now, unfortunately, you can't say that about some other life safety systems, even like a seatbelt as an example. You know, even when the seatbelt's installed properly, there are still fatalities. So when these systems are installed improperly, they're not installed properly, then that's when you have breakdowns and you have fire suppression systems that don't work. So if you can imagine a nursing home or a hospital where a fire suppression system wasn't installed properly and there's a fire, and this happens throughout the course of the year around the country, you know, lives are at risk and people can die. So the UA's mantra of protecting a nation, the fire sprinkler industry is a big part of that because we're out there on the front line to help save lives. So that's what I mean when I kicked off and talked about essential work. The other UA trades are certainly providing essential work. You think about the medical gas folks, the HVAC folks, the plumbers that are going to be working on the infrastructure to remove lead from the pipes and repiping our infrastructure. I mean, that's all essential work. And we're on the front line of that as well.
Yeah, I just wish they'd get that infrastructure situation taken care of in Washington. My God, it's so frustrating.
It's going to happen. It can't happen soon enough. We're ready to work and continue working.
Tim, I got another question here. We just got a couple minutes left. Training669.org. Like I referred to you before, we have a national audience. Is that where I go to? I mean, you did a great job selling your program here. So anybody listening right now, if they want to get involved in this line of work, is that where they go to start? Training669.org?
They do, and it's a tremendous website. So training669.org, which is the apprenticeship website. So on there are six videos. So if someone wants to learn more about the fire protection industry, they're going to go to that website. There is a video on women in construction on that website. There's a video on military transition on that website. There's a video on a day in the life. And in all those videos, the interested party can look at and follow around a number of 669 apprentices on the job site in the classroom, and they can see what we're doing. And these videos really kind of, they do a great job of explaining, you know, what the day in the life is. And then there's another section on there called Get Started. So because we are a road local with jurisdiction in 48 states, our brick and mortar is out of Columbia, Maryland. But does that help you if you're in Portland, Oregon, or Vancouver, Washington, or Albany, New York? Well, we made the process a number of years ago really simple. So all the interested applicant needs to do is go to that website and watch a couple videos, become familiar, and then go to Get Started. And in Get Started, they're going to fill out a profile, which is really their contact information. It takes 3 to 4 minutes. That's it. And once they fill that out, their profile will go to every signatory contractor within a 100-mile radius of their zip code. So then they're going to have the contact from the signatory contractors that are looking for apprentices. So it's scalable. You know, it's based on, you know, our needs. We're not going to bring anybody through the program and hope they get a job. They're going to have a career first, and then they start the apprenticeship program.
I love it. Let's get everybody on that website, training669.org, training669.org. Tim Coleman, great job today. Keep doing what you're doing. I could tell in your voice you love doing what you're doing, so I appreciate you coming on the show. Okay, brother?
You bet, Flash. Have a great rest of your afternoon. Thanks for having me.
All right, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, the Ohio AFL-CIO and the latest from IATSE. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. find out more information online at labortools.com.